This is an interview with Neville McKinnell, recorded jointly for the Australian Garden History Society's National Oral History Collection and the National Trust Clarendon Oral History Project. I'll be speaking to Neville about his life at and around Clarendon House at Nile, Tasmania, and in particular his knowledge of the property during the ownership of Walter and Kathleen Menzies, 1942 to 1962. The interview is taking place on Friday, the 16th of August, 2024, at Clarendon House. The interviewer is Jean Elder, and our recorder is Rhonda Hamilton. The Australian Garden History Society and the National Trust acknowledges traditional owners of country throughout Australia. We pay respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island cultures and to elders past, present, and emerging. But before speaking to Neville, I'm inviting Scott Carlin, Managing Director of the National Trust Tasmania, to introduce us to Clarendon House.
Well, the Clarendon estate was granted in 1816 to James Cox, who was the son of William Cox, who built the road across the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. Probably James received the grant as acknowledgement of his father's achievement in New South Wales. James received between 2,000 and 3,000 acres, and by other grants and purchases, essentially owned the whole valley between Clarendon and Kanara, further south. The Trust has always been interested in all periods of its houses' lives, and I'm hoping that this interview with Neville, I'm pretty sure this interview with Neville will fill us in on the archaeological richness of the place, because buildings have come and gone here, tank stands have appeared and disappeared. Clarendon's always been a rich man's plaything, and we were very grateful that Mrs. Menzies chose to give the house to the National Trust in 1962. Neville's kept an ongoing life with the property as our neighbour, and we see quite a lot of Neville, and it seemed time to get his memories down on paper so that he's part of the history of the property.
So, welcome, Neville. Can you tell me, we're starting at the beginning, what year and where you were born?
I was born in 1953 in Launceston in the QV, and I was brought straight out here to start my life off.
Right, in the Nile area.
At Clarendon House.
At Clarendon House,
yeah.
Ah.
That's where I come, straight from
so
North.
So your parents were already here?
Yeah, Mum and Dad, when Dad come here in 1946 as a farm manager, and then they got married. He met my wife, met my mother. They got married, and then they moved into this house, and then I come along, and yes, this is where I started off, and my sister too. So she was a year later.
And your parents had grown up in the Nile area? Tell me a bit more about them.
Dad grew up in the Nile area. His grandfather was brought out from England by the Camerons to work, and that was Jimmy McKinnell. Then his son Lou, which is Dad's father, he had five children, and they're in the Nile area all their lives. Mum was a Binns. She started to grow up opposite Ormley, because her father was a tin miner, and then Mum went to work in the woolen mills in town, and then later on Mum come out as a maid for the Boyses over at Loch Maben, and she used to come over here and do the washing up for the Boyses when they owned Clarendon House back in them days, and I think that's where Mum and Dad.
So that began their association with Clarendon House.
Mm.
And what was your father's role in Clarendon House?
He come here as a farm manager. He just looked after the stock and the cropping side, if there was any cropping he'd done the burial details too and all that sort of stuff. So with horses and.
So they had stud.
The Menzies had a horse stud,
Perhaps we'll come to talk a bit more about that, but a little later. But in your mother then worked once the two children, your two children were there. Did she work on the property too? What was?
No, Mum was just a bottle washer, bed maker, looked and after us kids. Yeah.
And tell us about the early life in the house. Where did you actually live in this enormous great house?
This room here was.
And we're sitting in the. Can I just explain to listeners? We're sitting in the front formal drawing room. Yep. So when you grew up.
This was a lounge room. Wasn't much furniture, but and the room across the hall was my sister's bedroom, and my bedroom was a little room just up the hall there. And yeah, so you know, we just lived on this particular floor.
And where was the kitchen then?
The kitchen was the first room on your left as you walked in the back door. That wasn't the original kitchen, but that was put in after they filled the house up with sand. And
now tell us about that. When did that happen? Was that before?
We reckon that happened back in the Cox's day, because the house started to move because it's on shallow, very shallow foundations, and so they pulled down the portico out the front. They pulled that down. They took all these sandstone blocks down off the top of the roof, which is what the parapet. They took them down, which is some of them are still out there in the garden today. And they filled the house up underneath with sand and logs, anything they can get their hands on to stabilise the house.
Because it was sinking, essentially.
It was just. I don't think it was sinking. It was just moving, like side. It was just moving about and. But anyhow, once they got it stabilised, before they finished down there, they pulled the stove and everything out from down underneath. All the anything that was salvageable, they pulled out and brought upstairs. And so the kitchen was in the first room on your left as you come in the back door.
And was there an inside toilet, bathroom?
Yes, there was one. There was a toilet upstairs, and the bathroom was on the same floor as where we are today. Over top of one of the stairs that goes down under the cellar. It was just a single bath, a single cold water tap.
No hot water?
No hot water. Mum had to go down to the outbuildings outside and boil the kerosene buckets, two kerosene buckets, and she'd bring them upstairs and she tipped them in the bath where her sister and I was. And by the time she got back with more, we've played around with a cold water tap. We're sitting there freezing.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was our bath.
That was your bath. Yeah. Tough, yes. Yeah. Tough childhood.
Well, we didn't know any different, honestly. Didn't know any different. And,
So the house, when your mother's caring for your children and doing the cooking and cleaning in Clarendon, which would have been quite onerous given no hot water in the house, but where was the was there a garden where the walled garden is now, the lovely walled garden? Was that still a vegetable garden in your time?
No, the walled garden was just a little paddock where we kept the dogs and Billy the sheep, and that was all. The main garden is where the sundial was. Dad used to dig all that garden up. He dig that up. That was the vegetable garden, where the sundial, all around the sundial.
And did you grow all your
vegetables? Everything. Yep.
And did you have chooks and?
Yeah, we had chooks. Yeah, we had chooks, and we used to go down the river, and you know, we used to get a few rabbits or a couple of wild geese and God knows what. But yeah, no, we mostly grew everything. We used to go down the Nile in the old motor car. Dad used to have an old coupe, Ford coupe. And that had a dicky seat in the back. You pull the thing out the back, and my sister and I, we used to sit up in the back of it, and we'd go down the Nile, because that's where Dad's parents were, and she had the shop at the Nile, Amy McKennell. And, we used to get their bit of tin stuff, what they needed, like, and we used to come back, yeah.
So how often would you do that trip?
Oh, that was once a week, you know, because they always went down and visit Dad's parents, yeah.
And coming to the Menzies family, they, I understand they didn't actually ever live here. So did they ever sleep overnight, or did they just host afternoon parties?
No, they never slept here overnight. They just used this. They used the grounds and a picnic table down at the stables and the little roundhouse that's there. They used to use that. They used to bring people out from town, and sometimes they used to bring a party of people out to go native hen shooting or ferret and rabbits and that. And then they used to have a picnic. They never lived in the house. They never entertained in the house. And they had the roo and deer park there. Dad used to have to go and get the roo and deer on a Sunday morning. He had a dog called Terps. He used to send Terps out across the river. And next thing, Dad would come in the house and said, "Come on, Mum, grab the two kids. We'll go down and watch the deer and roo come back." And we used to go down to the stables there and watch the dog bring all these deer and all this roo back across the river, these big foresters and that, and put them in the deer park, back in over the fence that fell down, back over there. And Dad and Mum, we used to stand the fence back up just in time for Mr. Manchin to come out with his entree, all these people. And they'd walk around, have a look, and go off and do what they had to do, and then come back and have a picnic. Then in later years, and just in a little bit in later years, was just Kathleen and Wally. Manchin's, they used to come out and just come out themselves with a picnic basket, and we used to go down and have a picnic with them, and it was... They never treated, they never had any kids at all, so they treated my sister.
So you were kind of their children?
Yeah, they treated Mel and I as their own. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were quite fond of you and you of them, is that?
Yeah. So, you know, they were real good. Yeah.
And when you talked about the deer, where exactly was the deer park?
All out in front here. All this out in front. Yep, from the entrance all the way down to the back of the paddock there, 9 acres. Of
through the, all the park land?
Yeah.
Through, there were all the existing trees then?
Yeah.
So was that fenced in any way?
Yeah, that was fenced I think there was 7 foot fence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 7 foot fence, yeah. I know it was high because we couldn't get over as kids.
Oh, you couldn't get over it, so
no,
yes.
No, because we didn't even try to climb over it, you just couldn't, it was too high. Yeah.
So, and now let's talk a little more. We started talking about the horses and the stud. So the Menzies had a stud property here.
Yep.
What can you tell me about that as a horse stud? Did they make some changes to the property?
Yes, he made a lot of changes. He put up a lot of sheds and that for foaling sheds and that around the place. He done a lot of post and rail fencing. He done a lot of double fencing where he planted macrocarpus and lumbernianas and a few pine trees. Everything was double fenced. Even all around the house here, it was all fenced off. And so there was horses everywhere them days. And that was the Ledger's breed. And then there was another stallion called Dapper. When those two got together, it wasn't pleasant to watch them fight. And Mum knows all about that.
How do you mean? What was the story there?
Oh, Mum's seen them fight real bad, and she reckons she doesn't want to never want to see two stallions fight again. I've only seen stallions fight once, but it's not a pleasant thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty brutal.
And the stallion legislator? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Him?
Yeah, and Dapper. Yeah, and I remember Dapper. Those two real clear. Yeah. Especially Dapper, because they used to live out just out here in the park here, Dapper did. And the legislator was over the other side there. Yeah.
Were they the two that fought together? No.
I doubt it. I couldn't be 100% sure. Right, but.
And tell us a bit more, do you remember Mr. Ted Mooney, who as the stud groom?
No, I don't remember Ted Mooney, but I do remember Eric Fox. And Keith Evans. Keith Evans, I think he was before Eric Fox, because Eric Fox had two children, Michael and Patricia, and we grew up, we knocked around together as kids.
And they live nearby? Eric?
Hmm?
Did he live nearby?
He lived in the Chook House.
Right.
Where the Fly News Museum is. We always called that the Chook House because that was all that long, it was all a poultry place where they used to keep the poultry back in the when they first settled.
So there were, apart from you and your sister, there were other children?
Yeah, there was Michael and I can't think of this girl's name now, that's just gone. But in Allendale, which is up where the cottage is, that was another farm, and there was Max Cowdery and Alison Cowdery there, and they used to live, or Max used to live with his grandfather there. So, yeah, we used to knock around a lot as kids, yeah, right up to till we left school. So, we had a lot of fun. But, yeah.
And with the stud, was the carriage loop used in conjunction? Was that used? Did the carriageway, was that used as part of the stud property? Were the horses used on the carriage loop?
What are you talking about, the carriage loop? Around the park?
Yes.
That wasn't there. No, that wasn't there at all. That was put in probably in the late 70s or in the 80s. That was put in there. The first person to grade that up was Jerry Wise from Rilbia. He came in with a little grader and put that in. Back, I'm pretty sure that was in the 80s. That was never ever a road round there. That was
right.
Just, yeah, never ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Were there other buildings that the Menzies family altered or changed?
There's a lot of buildings that they had here, and there's only one still standing. There's one, two, three. Yeah, four. There's only four buildings still standing on Clarendon. And that's the tin shed, mm-hmm. just down here. And there's a shearing shed down there that I own. And there's a shed at my place there I use it as an oil shed. And the hay barn. Oh, no, the hay barn's not there anymore. We just put a new hay barn up there. So, yeah, so there's only three existing sheds that Menzies put up. But there were sheds all over the place, but they all got pulled down after the horses got sold off because there was no need for them anymore. And build material, they just pulled buildings down to rebuild something in them days. They didn't waste nothing, mm-hmm. even the nails. I can remember straightening nails out. That was one of our things that we was told, getting to straighten those nails out.
So you would have remembered Clarendon without the columns and portico.
Yep, yeah.
And we talked before the interview just that they weren't actually the columns or the stones anywhere in the garden that you recall.
No, the only thing that was only in the garden was the sandstone blocks off the parapet. The columns were gone. No one seems to know where they went. They was gone. And they would have been sandstone columns them days. They would have been in certain blocks and stacked up. They wouldn't have been in one length. They would have been cut and stacked. Mm. Where these ones here today, they're solid concrete.
And do you remember where the iron conservatory went?
No, when Murray McKennell, he's my cousin, because Dad and his father were brothers. Murray and I, we helped to dig all the house out underneath, and it was one room blocked off. And after a while, when they got the doors open, it was full of old furniture. And I mean, this furniture was old. There was nothing fine like that. It was chunky stuff, So that, in later years, that tells me that it was damn old, this furniture. And it was a lot of stuff. And the conservatory was in there, all pulled down and all stacked away. I still can visualise it, and it was white, and it was sort of like, I think it was Archie-looking stuff, and it all glass and everything. And, that everything just disappeared virtually overnight.
What era was this? What, roughly?
That would have been 70, early 70s. It had to be around about 72, 73, I think. Yeah. I'm just trying to think when Murray and I started work. Yeah, this was our first job, was here. Yeah, so, but everything went everything just disappeared, and we got an idea that it went to Hobart.
Okay.
That's the last we ever heard.
But where did that kind of idea come from?
Oh, just from work, you know, people work.
Word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff disappeared.
That included the original iron kitchen range. Did that disappear as well?
Oh, the stove. Mm. Yeah, that went. That was, yeah. Like, damn days, it didn't worry me or anyone, really. The attitude those days were totally different to what it is today when it comes to stuff like that. Like, if you see that today, you're going to grab it, you know, because it's worth a lot, and it's you won't see it again. So, yeah.
Yeah, when the National Trust acquired the outbuildings, Clarendon's outbuildings, from your father in 1988, can you tell us a bit about that? How did that come about?
Well, Mrs. Menzies only gifted the house of 9 acres to the National Trust, and she kept the Chook House, she kept all outbuildings. She kept all that. Anyhow, when she passed away in 85, there was a Cyclone Tracy went through Darwin. You remember when Cyclone Tracy and wrecked everything? And building material was worth a lot of money, especially bricks. So Dad and a couple of others and I, we decided we're going to run a wire rope around these outbuildings and yank them down and pallet all the bricks up, because it was worth a dollar a brick. Anyhow, the Trust got wind of it and slapped a heritage order on it. And then they tried to make Dad start doing paint and fixing the roofs and doing all that, and Dad said, well, bugger you, you can bloody well buy them off me. And that's what happened.
Great story. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Because you can't put machinery in those old buildings. They're hopeless. For farming enterprise. All right, if you're running a horse stud or a winery, but when you've got big machinery and a lot of stuff, they're hopeless. Yeah. And the floors were falling in on one stables and all that. And the only original stables are here, everything that's still original, is the middle stables. They're the only ones that's still original. Everything's still original there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And your father made changes... like the Clarendon Station building that went to the Great Lakes?
The house did, yeah. We pulled the house down and we pulled it all to bits, and then we rebuilt it up home in a module form, and we took it up to Arthur's Lakes. That's where that's gone. The goods shed that was there, we pulled all that down. That all got used as building materials and everything around the farm. The railway station, we don't know where that went. That someone else bought that and took that. Yeah. So.
And the skinning from the back, the east side of the stables, that iron got reused somewhere
else.
Yes,
all the timber and iron, all that's only up the road here, about a kilometre and a half up the road. Yeah. And that's all in a shed. Yeah, still there today.
Still in a shed there now.
Yeah, still there. Still there as a shed. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, the changes that happen.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen a lot of changes and a lot of changes that should have never, ever happened.
So?
That's in architecture-wise and all that sort of stuff. What I get really annoyed about, because I've been here so long, is that people are inventing history, and that really gets up my neck.
Can you give me an example?
Oh, well, one bloke reckoned he was telling the tourists and that because they asked why there's two front entrances to the house, they said, oh, well, all the portico, all the front, this front, was facing the river, and they picked the house up and turned it around. I thought, this is bull. And like this... it's like they changed the door on the stables down there. They put a window in there. Well, that was always a buddy door there. I can remember the buddy door, and we used to play there as kids. And, you know, yes, if I had a bit more time to think, I can, you know, they just change some of the stories. They try to say that all the bricks and everything come from over the river, made over there, but they weren't. They was made down here in the lagoon, because where they dug all the clay out. You know, that's a 40-foot hole down there.
So the bricks were made locally?
Yeah, they were made on the spot, yeah. Yeah, so...
And can you remember the day then that Clarendon was open to the public after National Trust took it over? Was there a special day of celebration?
No, I can't remember that. No. But I can remember the back in the late mid 60s, or they used to have fairs out here pretty regular, you know, and we used to like the fairs because it was old type fairs, the old ginger beer in the barrel, you know, and the bloke goes and belt the tap in and the bloody tap flies out and there's ginger beer going everywhere. So all us kids are laying on the ground trying to soak up this bloody ginger beer. And then they used to have, wasn't any refrigeration in them times, or there was, but there wasn't portals, so they come out with square blocks of ice. And at the end of the day, they used to leave the blocks of ice on the ground. So us kids, we used to get them and we used to sit on them and slide down the bloody hill, down the bank down there. You know, we spent hours and hours carrying this bloody block of, these blocks of ice up the hill, and sit on them and slide back down the hill again.
Great fun.
But there was old canvas tents and, you know, the chocolate wheel and, you know, a lot of stuff there for sale, you know.
Was that then the Menzies family organised the fairs?
No, that was trust.
Oh, it was a National Trust.
Yeah,
time.
That all come through the trust, yeah. Yeah, I suppose raising
as
money.
As fundraisers.
Probably fundraising and something like that. And then they had a traction engine bogged out on the bay lawn out here. And that was funny. And then chaff cutting and, you know, that was, yeah. No, they've done a lot of fundraising stuff here and over the years.
Yeah. So when you were living in it, was there any furniture? It was very simple. There's no furniture.
There was no furniture. No furniture whatsoever. When Dad moved in here, the only furniture we had was supplied by Menzies, and that come from a factory called Henry Bills and Co's, which is in Lindsay Street in town. Mr. Menzies owned that. He had a furniture factory, and so he built all this furniture and he bought it out here for Mum and Dad. So that was all, you know, wardrobes, low boys, beds, and we were set up, like, there was no problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, where did Mr. and Mrs. Menzies live in Launceston?
One Line Avenue, Elphin Road.
Elphin, uh-huh.
Yep, and her mother lived up Line Avenue, next corner up Line Avenue. Her mother did, and she wanted her mother to move out here to live, and her mother said she wasn't going to live out here in a cold place. So they stored all the furniture upstairs in one of the rooms, which we never, ever, as kids or Mum and Dad, never ever got to look at. And it was always locked.
Happened to all that furniture?
That all went when Mr. Menzies died and Mrs. Menzies got it all moved out.
Is that the furniture that I understood that the Pitt family bought complete rooms of for their house, for Longford House? Is that where some of that went? No.
I wouldn't know. I couldn't tell you anything. Yeah. The only thing Mrs. Menzies took from this place when she handed it over, she took that mantelpiece there. She took that and she put that in One Line Avenue and she said when she passes, it's got to come back. And it come back.
It came back.
Yeah, because she loved it. She really liked it. So she put it in One Line Avenue. In her place.
Did you ever go to the house in Launceston?
Yeah, we went in there a lot of times for afternoon tea and God knows what, yeah. It was pretty starchy, you know what I mean, them days. Everything was starchy.
So you had to be on your best behaviour?
Oh, yeah.
And scrubbed up before you went?
Yeah, Sunday school best.
So do you remember that with trepidation or...?
Yeah. I haven't forgot a lot of those sort of things, you know, even going to Sunday school every second Sunday, you know, we had to go to the Nile and dress up in Sunday school gear. That was all Mum, she was proud. We all dressed up neatly, my sister and I, but after a while we get underneath the house there and the cobwebs would come out, cobwebs all over, but we still had to go to Sunday school.
Ah, dear. Now, tell us a little, if you can, about the garden, because we're interested in, it was originally when the Cox family first established a beautiful parkland garden. Did, when the Menzies were there, did they employ a gardener?
No, no, there was no garden, no. Everything was run down when Menzies bought the place, literally run down. And all he done was just all the fencing and there. And I don't know whether he put the bath or the toilet in, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, no, there was very limited maintenance done on anything. It was just all horses.
So your father's job, how did any of the gardening and
Dad happen? Just dug the bloody got all the sundial is all those round gardens. He just dug all them up, put all vegetable garden in. There was no roses, no nothing. There was nothing. It's just a bare yard.
The garden had gone.
Yeah. So yeah. So we more or less just lived here. We didn't nothing looked after. Yeah.
And the Elm Avenue.
The Elm Avenue only had one lot of elms down one side. The ones on the left going out, they. Think they might have been planted there in probably the 80s. Because that used to be a fence along there, and there used to be a lot of suckers along there, elm suckers and God knows what. And all around the parkland, there used to be all pine trees. And they took them out in the 80s, and they took a lot of trees out in the 80s, actually. And there used to be a big pine tree in front of this house here, huge big pine tree. There's photos of it there. There's a photo there of it. And they couldn't pull it over the bulldozer. They had a bulldozer backed up to the one of the oak trees out there in the paddock, and had this big cable on it, and they still couldn't pull it over. And but a young bloke like me playing with matches got a fire in it once and virtually burnt it down.
Burnt.
Yeah, so they got it down.
Oh, that burnt the old.
Oh, yeah, once a fire got in it, they realised, oh, yeah, the fire's going to drop this tree, so they kept stoking her up, and they got it down. And I was only a little bit of a kid then, but I knew how to play with matches.
Neville, I'm coming back. When you spoke about the sundial just earlier, the sundial dial today is not the original one, is it?
That's correct.
So yeah. Do you remember the original one?
It had Father Time on it. Old Father Time of the Sickle. But I can't give you all the details because, as I say, I was only a young person then, but Dad can remember everything. And when they come to the I don't know if it was the ski ball or the gay ball, the people were here, they had to replace it. So Dad gave them all the information, what was written on it. And I'm pretty sure that's the one that got replaced.
Replaced, yeah. And another question, when we were talking earlier about the stud farm the Menzies had and the stallion legislator, there was a plaque, I understand,
yes.
And it's disappeared.
That went the same time.
As what? As?
Theft.
Theft, when a whole lot of the other things disappeared.
Those two items disappeared when they used to have the balls and everything here, ski balls and everything. A lot of young people around them days, and yeah. So that's when they disappeared, because I always remember Dad was going crook. He was mental over it, and he knew when.
He thought he knew who.
He knew where they went, and yeah.
That was in the 1950s.
No. That was in the late 60s when they used to have ski balls and that in the trust and that for raising money. And it was like a lot of these people, a lot of them are in that book there. Little photos and everything of all the ski balls all dressed up in penguin suits and God knows what. It was something like rural youth today, you know, all young people. Yeah. They just run riot around the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, we haven't talked much about the farming that happened here and you as a farmer. There were in your father's time here, there were both cattle as well as the horses, stud horses, and Corriedale sheep and some crops. Is that
correct? Yes, that's correct. Yeah, they used to grow a lot of oats and that here for the horses, and when the horses were about, and a bit of hay and that for the cattle, and Cornmow sheep. And that was Dad's job to do that, yeah.
So where were the crops in, on the property?
Oh, they would have been anywhere because they had alternate paddocks and that, mm-hmm. you know, for crops of them days because, yeah. Them days they would have fallowed paddocks, they would have ploughed paddocks up in autumn time or early winter and let them fallow till springtime because it was worth a bag of super, leave the ground to fallow. So, yeah, them days, yeah.
Explain that to me, worth a bag of super.
Worth a bag of super, well, they didn't have to buy a bag of fertiliser to put on. It was just the mulch and everything breaking down over that time. That was the difference, yeah.
And your dad introduced Merino sheep?
He introduced the Merino, he went and bought some Merino rams from Kelvin Grows, and he put them over the Corridale ewes, which bred what they call a Cormo sheep. And from there on, Dad kept putting the Merino over the Cormo till we come back to the full Saxon Merino. Super fine, and that's what I run here now, super fine Merinos. Yeah. Which is wool's not worth much at the moment, it's gone down to buggery now. Yeah.
And when the boys owned the property, before the Menzies came, do you remember much of what your parents talked about the boys' family and how they lived?
No, there was very little conversation about them because no one knew anything about them other than Mum, and all Mum said that they was just party goers, the place was dolled up, and because Mum used to, she was a maid for the two sisters that lived over at Strathmore. And Mum said, yeah, that was a funny lot of breed. But that was all. Mum never spoke too much about it.
So they were just known as party goers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And now I'm going to move to talking about the flood in 1969. What happened? Did that impact Clarendon badly?
The farm, oh yeah, totally wiped the farm out.
Wiped it out?
Yeah, like we lost 5.5 mile of fencing, and
And stock?
No, we never lost any stock. They used to get a warning when it was coming. Used to get about a 30-hour warning. But since the 1929 floods, I've seen that many floods. I've lost count. In 2011, I seen 6 floods, and 4 of them were big ones. And I think I lost about 3 mile of fencing out of one of those. And every time I put up a fence, we get a flood a couple of weeks later, wipe it out again, you know. And then we get a lot of other little floods in between. And then in 2016, we got that big one that come down. Well, most of our floods come from a place called Mount Victoria, which is up in towards Scottsdale area. That's where the floods come from. And normally it takes about 30 hours to get down to here.
So you've got time to move stock higher up.
Yeah, and but this one done it in 14 hours for the simple reason because a lot of forestry work clearing hills and logs, you know, taking, and because that didn't hold the water up. Because when the forest holds water up, it gives all the lower streams chance to get away. Well, it didn't, and that flood caught up with the South Esk and the Ben Lomond River, which was still here, and that turned into a huge flood. And that was only 500 mil lower than the 1929 flood.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Devastation.
Oh, yeah. And I was really lucky. I bought all the sheep up on the Monday night, and then I went back just on dark to shift some more. I thought, no, I'll bring them up a bit further because we wasn't expecting the flood to be here late Tuesday afternoon. When I looked out the window Tuesday morning, she's already here and starting to go down.
So
and I had to go and shift one lot of sheep, but I over-panicked really because I thought it was still coming until I went down to the railway bridge and had a look, and she peaked at midnight Tuesday morning. Wow. She peaked, and I could have lost 500 ewes if I hadn't have had that thought.
Thought.
Yeah. You get that when you're on this river, because it is a river flat. It's flood prone country, and we're the lowest on the South East River. So I was only left with 35 acres out of 670. And I had to run nearly 1,200 sheep on that. Mm. I was virtually, if I hadn't done the back door, they probably would have come in. Yeah.
While we're talking about your property, Neville, which the Menzies family gave the property to you, when was that? When did that occur?
85, she died, mm-hmm. and she willed the farm to Dad. Yep.
Right. And one of the questions we're wondering is whether the ponds on your property, were they part of a previous orchard or
yep.
kitchen garden? They were.
Yeah, that's where the original orchard was down there. And the other part of the pond further down where the deep water was, that's where they dug all the clay out to build all the buildings and everything. And that was filled up with water after everything was finished. Then back in the late 60s, early 70s, they decided to turn the old orchard into a lake, because, you know, water storage was important in times. So we put up the banks and everything. And so, yeah, that's a big lagoon now, full of lilies.
So yeah. You must have seen a lot of, as a farmer, changing weather patterns
yep.
throughout the years and the impact that's having on water availability?
Well, in my younger days, you can drive down that Nile Road and you can look out towards Ben Lomond and you wouldn't see Ben Lomond. You wouldn't even see the foothills, the trees.
So that's all gone?
That's all gone now. And I remember back in the late 50s, 60s, when we used to cut hay in January, and if sometimes when you got round to a certain place and you could look on the foothills, it'd be shining, it'd be glitter everywhere, and that was water coming out of the foothills, shining on the rocks and that. And we used to get bogged here in January cutting hay, and you don't see that anymore. And then we used to get late storms, like late spring storms, they used to come through around about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. They only last for about half hour, cold as anything. And that was like little mini storms, thunderstorms. And after the 60s, 70s, we haven't seen them for years. And I noticed in the last few years we've been getting them back. And even back then, them early days, March was the hottest part of the year. I mean, it was hot, but we haven't seen that for quite a while now.
So the climate's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's coming back round.
Mm.
That what I seen 40, 50 years ago, it's coming back round. And you try and explain that to the younger generation, because they haven't been there, they don't understand.
Did you keep rainfall records over the years?
No. No, geez, I'd fill this house if I did. I do keep charts, actually. I got a chart and I just write them down, you know, after... Yeah, I do, but I even keep flood records now. I've been doing that for the last quite a few years now. When there's a lot of rain and there's a flood coming, I clock onto Llewellyn flood station and I print that out, and I've got that in a folder. So when it peaks at a certain level, I know exactly what it's going to do down here and when it's going to get down here, so it gives me plenty of time to shift things.
Yeah. And now, Neville, we're looking at your scrapbook and a map of the Clarendon grounds, and it's fascinating to think about all the changes that have happened over the era. When I look at the Clarendon grounds, as we know, the house in the centre here wasn't the first house. There was another house built a lot earlier a beautiful, spacious wooden house, I understand. And where was that?
That was behind, off where the shearing shed is, between the, where the railway line wasn't there at the time. And that's where it was. And when the main house was finished, they pulled it down and put the wool shed in, because the original wool shed was further back east of the Clarendon house.
Right. Yeah. And there are some old brick paths near that?
Yeah, there's some old brick foundations and paths and that there. And there's an elm tree growing at that spot, and it's grown up through a ring of paths. It was a big ring of bricks there, and it's grown all up through that. So I tried to unearth it here quite a few years ago, think that when Jenny Chapman was running the place and that was going to do an archaeological dig, but it never eventuated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And then the in front of the main house now, as we know, Clarendon, there are two very old elm trees, and they date from the Cox era.
Yes.
Because we have an 1869 photograph that shows those two elm trees.
Yeah.
The other old trees are in the northern area that we call the Parklands area.
Yep.
So there's some old elms there and some oak trees that are quite old as
yes,
well.
Yes, there's a couple of old oak trees there and some elm. There's elm trees there, not as old as the ones in front of the house. A lot of these old elm trees down around here, a lot of them are suckers.
Right.
Because down along the drive there, it used to be gum trees down there.
Right.
And they took the tops out of the gum trees back in the late 50s, because that was some idea of regenerating trees, but only the one survived. Yeah, so and he's still there today, but all the others died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the, in the Parklands area too, in front of the house, are the old, right along the now Courage Way, are the hawthorn hedges. Now, they're very old, aren't they?
Yes, the ones that on the boundary, they're very old, and the ones are internal are the old hawthorn hedges, and the internal ones have been looked after in these later years by the National Trust. So, yeah.
And the... There was a pond, an island in that centre at one point?
Yes, there was a pond probably about, 40 metres from the front of the house, and that contained geese, Cape Barren geese, I should say, swans. We had guinea fowls, we had peacocks, ducks. Everything was floating about there them days. Yeah.
So that got filled in the 80s?
That got filled in, probably in the 70s that got filled in when they took down the, when we cleared all out underneath the house, all that, and a lot of stuff got filled in and disappeared, so, yeah.
Right, that and was part of the excavation of all the sand in the foundations, once the house was stabilised. And there was an aviary, was that right beside that?
Yes, the aviary would have been... About 20 metres out, or 10, 15 metres out from the conservatory under the elm trees. Yeah, that was...
Was that there at your time?
Yes, that was there at my time. I can remember as a kid going there, and we used to be looking through the wires at all these little birds and that. And, yeah.
When did that end, the aviary?
Oh, that all disappeared when Mr Menzies died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we moved to... which direction are we going? Where the old orchard was. There was a tennis court too in that part.
There was a tennis court out west of the house.
On the western lawn?
Yeah, on the western lawn. That was a tennis court. It wasn't in my day, but it was a tennis court. Because Mr. Menzies turned that into where he used to keep his horses, like a stallion and that.
Right.
You've got to remember that when Mr. Menzies bought the place... It was all run down. It was just, everything was just run down. And when he got it, he just turned the stables into loosened boxes and done all the fencing all around the place. Yeah. And that was a tennis court there, because I remember Dad and them often talked about it.
They played on it?
No, they never played on it, but they So Dad grew up in the area here, and we used to have another bloke used to come in the 60s, late 60s, by the name of Frank Colgrave. He was from Evandale, and he used to come in and do fencing. And he was in his 70s then when he come here. And, oh, he was full of information. He could tell you a lot of stuff about the place because he used to come here as a young bloke that was working on Clarendon.
Right.
Long before I even set foot on the country, so.
There was an old orchard in
yes,
that
yes, that was an old orchard.
Beyond
down
there. Yep. Where the tennis court...
Yep. Yep. Yeah, just behind the macrocarpa trees.
And what do you remember what plantings were there?
Oh, there was a lot of fruit trees there, a lot of fruit trees. And in my day, they was all dilapidated and fallen down. And, okay. You know, they weren't... It was never ever looked after. I don't reckon boys has ever looked after them because everything was just falling down.
Right. And then the stallion paddock was somewhere near the... Behind the gardener's
what's that?
Cottage. The stallions, is that where the paddocks were there?
Oh, no, they used to keep the stallions. The what? Stallion on one on
right
the
tennis, on the lawn.
One on the tennis court, that was a paddock, that's a fair paddock. And the other one, the other dapper, they used to keep him out here on the front lawn.
Right.
In there, in that paddock there.
So it was all there. Fenced?
Yeah, everything was fenced. All this out here was all fenced. There was fences everywhere, even down here on the main, just down from the main entrance where the water crossing goes. There used to be foal sheds there, there was foal sheds there, there was foal sheds everywhere.
So did the pine trees around that boundary, did they get removed when fences went in, some of the...?
They removed when the National Trust took over. A bloke by the name of Alistair Cowdery, he was a sawmiller and a logger, and he come in and we took all the pine trees down. He took them down for the trees. National Trust didn't charge. He didn't charge the National Trust for anything. He just wanted the trees because they're so straight and real straight, you see, and solid. So they made good timber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they would have been. They weren't in the 1869.
Yeah, they were Boer War stuff. Yep.
Right.
Because they was planted close together, they just grew straight up. Yeah.
Right. And then as we come around, in the area of the guardhouse, the convict and the coach house. Are there changes here?
The only change was the stables down here, all the stables. They used to be convicts' quarters. And when Menzies bought it, he pulled all the chimneys out and he put turned them into loosen boxes for the horses. And... And that little sick, what we call a sick bay, that little shed there, the brick shed, that was back in convict day, that was a sin bin, that was like a little mini jail.
Uh-huh.
And I always can remember the door. They used to keep the door in the upper stables there. I can always remember the door, but that was what that was for. But when Menzies bought it, he turned that into a sick box for his horses, so where he can put his horse, you see. These stables here, everything's still original in the number 15 there. They're all everything's still original in there. Yeah.
And do you remember with the stud, where Legislator was buried or Dapper?
Dapper was buried down in the gravel pit, but I don't know where Legislator went. I haven't got a clue. But I'm pretty sure he died on the place because, you know, he was a pretty old horse.
And now we're moving to 16, 17, 18, the stone barn and the cottage and the woolshed. What are the changes here? This is paths and fences that changed over time there. There's a well, I understand.
Yeah, there's a well down near the river there. They dug down to river level and the water came in through the stones and they pumped that up with a windmill and that was all lead pipes run across to the house.
So where the windmill was down near the well then?
Yeah, it was on top of the well.
Ah.
Yeah, they pumped out of the well, the windmill. The stone barn hasn't changed in my time. It's still the same, which is a credit to why that they built it, because it's only building here without spouting, apart from the shoe shed. There's no spouting on the shoe shed. But these other buildings, they put spouting on them, and they started to move, so they had to put rods from one side of the building through to the other. That's why you look at old buildings around the state, they got S's and crosses on them. That's to hold the walls up. That's what they asked for. So, because when they put spout around, it dried the clay out because everything was built on shallow foundations, so they depended on the the clay to keep everything stable. And once you dry clay out, it starts moving. The stone barn, it hasn't moved, apart from that wall there, because there's a couple of blackwood trees which I'm trying to get the truss to shift, because they're the ones that caused that wall to crack. So they had to jack that wall back up on the end of the stone barn. But other than that, the stone barn is in damn good order. The cottage, yes, that's had about three verandas on, back skillings on it since I can remember. The chimney, the fireplace has gone out of it, which it shouldn't have ever went. What they'd done to that building was it's a bloody disgrace to the architect. He didn't have a clue what he was doing. The stone barn, shearing shed, they changed the door to a window, which was wrong. But everything else in there is pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still the same. But that was built after they pulled the house down, when the original house down.
Right, yes.
Because the railway line went through there the timber building. That was put in after 46, because this part here, this cottage and shearing shed, and across the railway line was 400 odd acres. That was a soldier settlement. This was separate to Clarendon after Cox's was after it was split up.
Right.
That was put into a soldier settlement. So Alan Cowdery had this place here. Yeah.
So and that was that timber building.
That timber building. Dad's brother put that up. That was put up in later years. So that's got no heritage value whatsoever.
Mm. But it's part of the history.
Right, yep.
This tank stand, tell us about this. I'm now holding a photograph.
Yep.
Of you.
That's my... Yeah,
in front of...
I was dressed up in my sports uniform at Evandale Primary School. We used to have, what is it, a blue team and a red team and a green... Remember those ribbons? That was me in...
Fine-looking lad. Yeah. Now, tell me about the tank stand.
The tank stand was right beside the back entrance into this house. You've got to remember, all the moat and everything wasn't there. It was all filled in my day, and the tank stand was sitting on top of that, and the stairs that went down underneath, we didn't even know that was there. Apart from the doors under there, we knew there were doors under there, but we didn't know there was stairs. And that tank stand was supplied the water. I suppose the windmill pumped up in there, but I don't think the windmill did, because in my day, over in these stables, in this stables here, there was a... Number 14. There was electric... power onto that, and there was a Godwin water pump down there, and that used to pump the water to the house and to everywhere it had to go, and that was a double-piston Godwin pump. And that laid there for years and years and years, but don't know where we're up into it now. So, but that pumped it up into that big tank, and the tank itself, that's up home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Dad pulled that down and got the timber and all that, and the tank's up home, covered in brickwork up to home there. So, yeah. So that's the only surviving thing of it.
Right. And now we're in the scrapbook, and we're turning to a photograph dated 13th of November 1961, and this was the stud sale. Tell us about that.
Well, I don't know much about it. I would have been 9 years, 61, so I would have been, eight years, 61. I would have been 8 years old, so I would have been at school when all this was going on. So, yeah. But
it was the final sale of all the...
Yeah, everything was sold up on the day that everyone was there. But there's no records. I can't see no photos of horses or anything lined up. I don't know how they done it, but, yeah. So that's Bambi.
And then we're looking at another photograph now of the same day. Yeah, tell us some Bambi.
Bambi. Oh, nice-looking little deer, but he let in, but he wouldn't let out. He kept butting us away from the gate all the time.
And I can see the huge deer fencing signs.
That's
there.
Right, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Just a question, is the base of the sundial original, but the dial itself later?
We're looking back at the sundial. There's the base.
Yep.
Is that the original base?
Yep, everything's original except for the sundial itself.
Ah, right. Yep. So yep. It's the sundial that was replaced.
That's right, yep.
Well, that's good.
And there's the...
Yeah, the chimney.
Chimney, not chimney. There, not there these days.
Ah,
yeah.
The chimneys are gone.
Yeah, they pulled it down because it was all collapsing down in the cellar.
And we're looking at a photograph here, probably when? 1940?
Probably,
roughly.
Yeah.
So that shows the original base of the sundial and chimneys on the roof.
Yep.
Okay. And here are...
That there is the railway station, and that and they when the railway line was put in, they put a road in from the railway station straight to the Nile Road. Fred Littlejohn was the first bloke to plough the first furrow to put the road in. Don't ask me what year that was. But they are sheep yards and cattle yards for the railway. They used to be a sideline there, and they used to shunt the trucks off, load all... People used to bring all their cattle and sheep and or get their fertiliser off the train or from around the Nile district.
Right.
Yeah, and that's when the railway first went through. Yeah, I can remember all that. We used to play in the super trucks as kids.
Covered in superphosphate powder.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the power pole. That's when they put
We're looking at a photograph, probably 1940. What are we looking at?
They're all outbuildings out here, yep.
Are they still existing?
Yeah, you was in there.
Oh, that's walking through those ones, yes.
Yeah, that's what they was, yeah, service quarters, yeah.
In the service, right.
Yeah.
So any thought of, do they predate this house or are they, do you think they do contemporary?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, that would have been back in the late 80s when... Yeah, that would have been back in the late 80s there when Dotson was moving out.
Now, tell me about that. That's was he the glassblower?
Yes.
So yep. Did he live here?
He lived in the house and he wanted somewhere to...
The Fly Fishing Museum.
Yeah. The Fly Fishing Museum is now, yes.
Yeah. And he wanted somewhere to start up because he'd been all over the world learning, James Dotson, and got to know Dad and... So Dad said, well, you can have the tin shed and start your business in there, and that's where he started. Yeah, and he was in there for a few years until he bought Bedorban, now the big shed at Bedorban there. Now he's not there anymore now. I don't know where he's gone. So
yeah. Now we've got some more photographs of... Ah, there we...
There's the round shed there. You can see all the trees all about here. Everywhere.
Yes,
a lot of those are
that's
all gone.
About 1961.
Yeah, they're all gone now. Yep.
And lots of fences at that point, yes, everywhere.
And whereabouts are we looking at?
We're looking from the river up towards the house. The house is just in there behind the trees, and that's the roundhouse. So we're looking up towards the roundhouse, and the stables are there.
Which is sometimes referred to as the gardener's cottage.
Well, we don't know what it was for, honestly. Yeah. We haven't got a clue. Because it's round the wrong way for a guard's house. It's round the wrong way. I don't know what a gardener cottage looked like. It's pretty bloody small, like you couldn't swing a cat in there.
Mm.
So we don't know what it was for, unless it was a paymaster store shop.
Or a summer house.
Someone kept a bit of bookwork when the house was getting built. Yeah.
So that's the gardener's cottage, little roundhouse. And then that we're probably coming towards the end. We're just looking at a very old photograph. So there's 1869, which shows very clearly the columns, the original columns and portico, and the two beautiful old elm trees. Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And a wonderful lawn.
Oh, yeah. That lawn out there when had daffodils and... snowdrops and all those sort of winter flowers, but they was all done in circles. And when I questioned Mum about them years later, She said they was designed to something to do with the sun and the moon. And I've gone through, I've got on the internet trying to find out patterns in England, because it would have come from England, the idea of what, how they arranged those sort of things and what it meant. But Mum said it was something to do with the sun and the moon. But
any of this fencing?
No. The only bit of fencing you'll see of that type of fencing is down at the Knoll Cemetery now.
Yes. Yeah.
It's down there.
And how would you describe that fencing, Neville? Was that timber posting and wire?
No, that's a steel. It's a steel H-line dropper. It's a piece of shaft like that, and then it's got a piece out like that, and you step that two pieces into the ground. And that's wrought iron.
Wrought iron.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I got the wrought iron. I got some wrought iron up home, but I haven't got the posts. They disappeared, and I'm pretty sure here I've got...
So we're looking here at the photograph of the original house, and it is showing on the right-hand side, facing the house, the 1869, probably some of that original unusual fencing.
Yes.
Called estate fencing.
Estate fencing.
I wondered if there'd been more of it on the property, but...
No, there's nothing.
Do you recall any other... when you were there, do you recall any of that fencing at all on the property?
Yes, it used to be. Some of it used to be around the front, around here.
And so it went right across the front?
Yeah, that's
right.
Did
you go down the main drive?
No, that was a big high fence down the main drive, big timber fence.
Well, thanks, Neville. Look, I think unless there are any other photographs we want to pick up on.
I just want to ask, is that the Shepherd's Cottage?
We're looking at a
front. Yep, that's the back of it, yeah.
Which is interesting because there's a skylight in the roof.
Yeah, well, Merrill put that in there. You notice the chimney's still there?
Shepherd's Cottage with a chimney.
So there was an upstairs, access to upstairs?
No.
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 All right, I think we might just finish up. And Neville, I want to say thank you so much for your time on behalf of the Australian Garden History Society and the National Trust. And your stories bring to life memories of a past time and a place at Clarendon. And you've done it in a really informative manner. And we much appreciate being able to add this to our archival collections. So thank you again.
Yep, that's okay, yeah.